Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is August 25th, the start of the Democratic Convention. It was on this day in 1814 that the British destroyed the U.S. Library of Congress. Those bastards. You know, it's amazing we're at peace with those guys. We've had two wars with Britain, and yet they're one of our best friends. Maybe we'll get over some of these other problems. Also, this is the day in which the first person swam the English Channel. Guess what year the English Channel was first swum? I guess swum's the right word. Swammed? Swunged? Who knows? That's right. 1875 was the first time someone crossed the English Channel. Went from Dover, England to Calais, France. Interesting. Well, want to go on now and talk a little bit about the election. Maybe a lot about the election, because this is the start of the Democratic Convention. And, of course, the big news leading up to the Democratic Convention is the selection by Barack Obama of Joe Biden to be his VP. So let me start there. I like Biden a lot, and I think Obama made the right call. I sent $100 to Joe Biden this year because I really like the guy and believe in him. Now, he had no chance to be president, and I knew it from the beginning. You know, some of our best, most knowledgeable people, they just don't capture the imagination of the country. And so they poll at 1 or 2 or 3%. Sometimes they get 10%, and they still aren't going to be president. Then people come from out of nowhere, whether it's Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton going back to 92 or Jimmy Carter going back to 76 or Ronald Reagan going back to 1980. You know, we had solid, well-known, competent politicians running in all those years, and these people that are unknown for the most part come out of nowhere, and people say, you know, I like the way he sounds. I'd like to have a beer with him or her. And that's how it goes. So Biden had no chance to be president, but now he does, because anytime you're elected vice president, you have a chance to be president the next time around. So if Obama were to win and serve two terms, Biden, he's 65 now, unfortunately he'd be 73 by the time it's time to run again. McCain is will be 72 by the time of this election, and he is considered, you know, on the borderline. He'll be the oldest president we've had if McCain gets elected. So Biden would be the oldest person to run if he were to run in 8 years. So I don't know that Joe Biden will want the presidency in 8 years. On the other hand, if his health is good, you know, he probably would want to run. But in some ways, you could argue that Barack Obama did Hillary a favor. That is, if he picked a younger person like a Jim Webb, you could be pretty sure Webb would want to run for president in 8 years. This is, again, making some major assumptions. One, that the Democrats win this year and that Obama were to serve two terms in a row, that things worked out with Obama as president. But be that as it may, here we are with Joe Biden. Now, what's interesting is the attacks have already surfaced. As soon as Biden was announced, within 6 to 12 hours, the McCain campaign had an ad out using Biden's words against Obama, because Biden said he didn't think he was ready to be president in the early stages of the debates, going way back to, I don't know if it was the end of last year or early January or whatever. And when he was asked again about that statement by Tom Brokaw, he said, I think he can be ready, but he's not now. And he said he stood by those remarks. Well, of course, you know, the McCain campaign will paint this in whatever way they can. Hillary also made remarks about Obama not being ready and, you know, just being popular isn't enough and just having soaring rhetoric isn't enough. You got to have detail behind it. All of that, all of those complaints were there because that's what your opponents do is they try and find your weaknesses. So it's a well-honored ritual that people use those statements against the people who made them. And if McCain chooses Mitt Romney, we'll see the same thing from the Democratic side because Romney and McCain both made negative statements about each other. But for now, the Republicans are going to try and make some hay out of the things that Barack Obama said and even Hillary said against Obama. Now, we should also remember that there's a long history of this and people turning around, right? LBJ was JFK's main competitor for the nomination in the year 1960. Kennedy picked him to run with him, and they got along okay, and they won. And in 1980, George W. Bush, I'm sorry, Bush's father, George H.W. Bush, Bush 41, when he was debating in the Republican debates, he called, or maybe there weren't debates back then for Republican candidates, I forget. Yeah, there were some, because Reagan famously said, I paid for that microphone. Well, in one of those debates, Bush called what Reagan's economic plan was voodoo economics, because Reagan was basically saying, I can increase the military budget substantially, cut taxes, and balance the budget. And everybody should have known it was smoke and mirrors. John Anderson actually called it that at the time. And Bush's father said it was voodoo economics. And, you know, he called Reagan out on that. And, of course, it was not true that you could do all that. There are still Republicans and conservatives that believe in supply-side economics and say if you cut taxes, you get more revenue. But that's a fantasy. That's not how it works. Long term, you lose money when you cut taxes. That's just common sense. So we're running big deficits now, and we ran them during the 80s. But Reagan was able to push, was able to pick George H.W. Bush to be his running mate, and they got past the voodoo economic stuff. You know, it's just what you say in the heat of a campaign. Now we get along. So this will pass. I don't think it'll amount to much. But an interesting phenomenon is taking place. And that is that there's a new ad out by the Republicans today, by the McCain campaign today, that uses Hillary's words against Obama and basically says Hillary doesn't think Obama's ready and he should be president. And that could backfire because right now what we've got going on at the Democratic convention this week, if you haven't seen the itinerary, I don't mean itinerary, the agenda, tonight, Nancy Pelosi's speaking. There's a tribute to the Kennedy clan, and Ted Kennedy's there and may make an appearance, which, of course, since he's had his health problems, he hasn't made a public appearance. And so that's happening tonight. And then Hillary speaks tomorrow night. Wednesday night is the nominating process. Hillary's name's going to be put in nomination. And Bill speaks on Wednesday night, Bill Clinton. And then Al Gore and Obama speak on Thursday night. Well, the drama is much greater on the Democratic side because the Hillary supporters are still somewhat disgruntled, is the argument. And the putting her name in nomination is regarded as a risky strategy. What if she, you know, what if they try and go crazy and try and take over the convention, try and embarrass Barack Obama? And then the ever helpful and ever Clinton supporter Bill Kristol on Fox News Sunday, he of Weekly Standard fame, ultra conservative, who claims to really like Hillary Clinton these days, recommended that the hardcore Hillary supporters ought to put her name in nomination for the vice presidency and take away Obama's choice, take it away from Biden and give it to Hillary. Yeah, that's going to happen. There's no way that'll happen. But the Republicans and conservatives would like nothing more to see unhappy Democrats and an ununified party coming out of the convention. That's not the way it's going to go down. These things have been scripted ever since the 1968 convention where the Democrats let it get away from themselves, and George McGovern ended up giving his acceptance speech at 2 or 2:30 in the morning. They're not letting that happen again. They know exactly how this is going to come off for television. They gave Hillary her night because they do want to win over her supporters. They're giving Bill Clinton his night because they want his support. But they also know that the Clintons are loyal Democrats. Hillary has no future in the Democratic Party if she is perceived as having not worked hard for Obama. If she's undermined Obama in any ways, she can never win the presidency or never win the Democratic nomination. And Bill Clinton's concerned about his legacy. You know, he's hurt, and in some ways rightly so, that he was accused of racism during the fight against Obama. But it's a tricky situation when you're running against a minority, whether it's a woman or it's a black guy. And so it really shows, in part, how tricky it's going to be for the McCain campaign to make this work. But certainly, Bill Clinton wants to solidify his legacy and his reputation. So both of them are going to get up. They're both going to give great speeches. They're going to energize the Democrats in the hall and around the country. And they're going to speak out strongly and forcefully in favor of Barack Obama. If either of them get up and do what some Republicans think they're going to do, or at least hope they're going to do, that is, they tout their own accomplishments and they give Obama a weak endorsement, that's problems for them. And so I don't think you'll see that happen. I think you'll see a unified Democratic Party, just the way the Republicans are going to be unified. You know, next week we got the Republican convention, and I'll save most of that conversation for then. But the dilemma with Republicans is that they've got this split in the conservatives. The conservatives never wanted McCain. You know, conservatives said some pretty nasty things about McCain during the primary, and now he's their standard bearer. And they're going to have to rally around McCain because they don't want Obama and Biden running the country, and they don't want Obama making judicial appointments. So they got to suck it up and rally around McCain. That's just, this is just the way politics works. So there won't be too many surprises at the conventions, but the Democratic convention will have more drama because of the issues that we've been talking about, and some we haven't talked about. And we'll continue talking about some of them when the Andy Finn Show returns after this.
Look at all the angry people. Richard B. Cheney swears at Pat Lay in public like so much hot air. Insists he and Bush care, waits for the weapons, still thinks Iraq was a threat to the U.S. homeland. I can't understand all the Bush appointees. Where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Rabbit and Coulter, writing the words to a book that reflects a strange fear. Who would come near, look at her whiny, blaming opponents and damning up dubious foe? Is it for show, all the right-wing parrots, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Look at all the angry people. Look at all the angry people.
Ambassador Bolton hates the UN, but now he is a part of it all. He's got some gall, push the divider, renominates right-wing judges, no change in his tone. And he's not alone, all the angry people, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong?
Sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is August 25th. Today is the birthday of Walt Kelly. Do you remember who Walt Kelly was? One of his famous lines, at least one of his character's famous lines, was, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." Walt Kelly was the creator of Pogo. It's also the birthday of George Wallace, a perennial presidential candidate from the South, ran on kind of a segregationist policy, so not perhaps the best model, but ran for president several times, was eventually shot in an assassination attempt and paralyzed, spent the rest of his life in a wheelchair. I think he was in a wheelchair. Yeah, he was. Let's move back to the election here. So, let me go back to the pick of Joe Biden and why I like him. Those of you who listen to the show regularly know that in the year 2000, in the 2000 campaign, I sent $100 to Bill Bradley, who was running for the Democratic nomination. I knew he didn't have much of a chance. And $100 to John McCain, who was running as in the Republican campaign. I wasn't sure if he had much of a chance. Well, neither of them made it. But I like politicians who will tell me the truth and speak their mind as much as a politician can afford to, and seems to have a grasp of the issues and isn't full of it. And both those guys struck me as reasonable guys. This year, I only sent money to one candidate early on. I was for Joe Biden. Now, it was clear to me Biden didn't have much of a chance, and I have now, I sent him $100. I've sent Barack Obama $100. Okay? But I was so glad he picked Biden. You know, I think that Karl Rove was on Fox News for a couple of weeks arguing, anytime you ask an arch enemy of the Democrats like Karl Rove to analyze the Democratic side, you never know whether you're getting this, you know, pure crap or what they really think. I mean, I guess you figure it's what they really think, but they can't help but not want the best for the Democrats. So Karl Rove was saying that we'll see in Barack Obama's pick of a running mate whether he makes a political choice or a choice that's good for the country. And what he meant was a choice that's good for the country would mean someone who's qualified to be president and doesn't necessarily help him, Obama, get elected. A political choice, he considered a governor or someone in a state that was a swing state. So if you pick somebody who's a senator or governor or well-known or comes from a swing state, you're basically trying to deliver that state to your side. So had he picked Jim Webb in Virginia, it would have been to try and deliver Virginia. Had he picked Governor Ed Rendell of Pennsylvania, it would have been to deliver Pennsylvania. Had he picked a politician from Ohio, it would have been to try and deliver Ohio. That's the logic. So, by that standard, Obama did not make a political pick. Now, what the common analysis is, of course, is that Obama is not perceived as having the foreign policy expertise that McCain has, and a percentage of the country, something like, I don't know if it's 48%, something like that, isn't sure he has the experience in foreign policy necessary to be president. Okay, so the logic says, okay, so you picked Biden, and he picked Biden for political reasons. Of course, I'm sure that's what Karl Rove is saying these days. I haven't heard him lately. But he picked Biden because Biden has tremendous experience in foreign policy. Biden has been in the Senate for, is it five terms? Let's see, he's been in 35 years. That's going on six terms. He was elected to the Senate when he was 29 years old, and he's now 65. And he's chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He's been chairman of the Judiciary Committee before. He's very experienced and knowledgeable. And one of the things Obama said in his introduction of Biden is that he wanted a running mate that would stand up to him, that would challenge him, that would tell him when he disagreed and give him another perspective. And I really respect that about Obama, and I actually believe it about Obama. You know, they said that about George W. Bush when he was elected, and I had hopes for Bush because he wasn't afraid to appoint people who had bigger reputations than him to his cabinet, or appoint people who were, quote, smarter than him to his staff and to work with him in the cabinet. But what we've discovered about the Bush administration is that they don't really discuss things in a wide circle. There are not open policy discussions about things. They decide things in a very tight-knit circle. Mostly it's Bush and Cheney, and when Rumsfeld was around, and Rice, and maybe some other domestic advisors. They make their decisions, and they don't really include their cabinet members very much. And, you know, what's most telling about the Bush administration is that this got uncovered by people like Bob Woodward and other people that have written books about the inner deliberations that went on. And while a lot of them haven't talked about it, people like Colin Powell and even Rumsfeld admitted the president never asked him, do you think we should go to war in Iraq? Right now, and there were never any open discussions about it, like what's the downside of it. You know, that's not normal. That's abnormal kinds of discussions. Not to have those discussions is abnormal. That's a weird way to run an administration. So all this notion that Bush puts smart people around him so that he can get a variety of viewpoints, he didn't want a variety of viewpoints. It's pretty clear whether it was energy policy or it was going into war or it was some of the other directives that were done in secret, the secret CIA prisons, the warrantless surveillance initiatives. There wasn't a wide discussion of those things with aides and with knowledgeable politicians. There wasn't a give and take with Congress about most of this. It was a small group of people deciding. Now, if they make the right decisions, that's fine, but I think we can all know from looking back on the last 8 years that, to use the phrase coined during the Reagan administration when no one wanted to take, quote, credit for the Iran-Contra mess, mistakes were made. I love that expression. Mistakes were made. We don't know what the mistakes were. We don't know who made them. We don't know when they made them for sure. It's all kind of hazy. We're not sure there are records showing who did it. But we're very clear mistakes were made. And by gosh, we're going to fix them. But, you know, that's not taking responsibility. That's ducking responsibility. I think Obama will be the kind of president that has discussions with aides, that doesn't make up his mind ahead of time, that's amenable to data and to information and to facts. The Bush administration operates mostly in a fact-free zone, whether it's the way they ignore science or the way they ignored the warnings that came from the Pentagon, the State Department, think tanks that said, you know, going into Iraq isn't the hard part. Getting out is the hard part. You better know what you're doing. You better have a plan. And they said, we don't need a plan. We're going to go in there, kick butt, and get out. And they just didn't discuss it widely enough. So I like the fact that Obama says he wants Biden to give him another perspective. He wanted somebody that would stand up to him. And Joe Biden will tell him what he thinks. But Obama will also be independent. And this is what's interesting. I tell my Democratic friends this, that they should make the contrast with George W. Bush. You know, people say Obama doesn't have enough experience. And it may be that the world has shifted some since 9/11. That is, we now are more acutely aware of the importance of having a president that makes the right call. But George W. Bush was elected with a very thin resume, certainly a very thin resume on politics. He was elected in 2000. Do you know how long he was in politics before that? 6 years. He started in politics as governor of Texas because the Bush name is popular in Texas, and he could start at governor. And Texas has a relatively weak governorship. That is, he doesn't have that many responsibilities. It's not like some states where the executive power is much stronger that's given to the governor. And while Bush was only in politics 6 years before we put him in the White House, by the time Obama goes into the White House, he will have been in politics. Guess how many years, folks, if you don't know this? 16 years. 12 years as a state senator in Illinois, getting to know the ropes of state government and of a legislative body, and now 4 years in the U.S. Senate. Well, if you think about it, 16 years versus 6 years, it's hard to paint Obama as inexperienced unless you want to go to the argument, well, look at what a disaster Bush was. You know, we should never have a president with that little experience. Well, that's true, but Obama doesn't have that little experience. He has quite a bit more experience than that in government. Beyond that, there's the issue of judgment. One of the points that Obama makes is that you can have all the experience you want. You have to have good judgment. You know, Cheney and Rumsfeld came in and were this really experienced team. We're supposed to keep George W. Bush from making mistakes. Instead, they let 9/11 warp their vision of the world and their view of what's reasonable and what's doable. And they got so frightened after 9/11 by terrorism and by what other people might want to do to us that they moved rashly into Iraq. So judgment's a piece of it as well. And I really think Obama has pretty good judgment. If nothing else, look at the campaign he's run. Right? So he's run the best campaign. Hillary's campaign was poorly run. You know, the Hillary supporters that want to complain that they weren't treated properly, Hillary has nobody to blame but herself for what happened in her campaign. They didn't run a 50-state campaign. They thought it was all going to be over by Super Tuesday. So they didn't bother investing in all 50 states, and they didn't bother in the small caucus states. They took a big state strategy, but it isn't winner-take-all primaries where the person with the most votes gets all the delegates. It's proportional representation. So the Obama team did it right. And McCain has run a poor campaign. He had a campaign that got derailed last summer. To his credit, he's come back, but he had to divest himself of most of his senior staff, cut back on staff, went back to a bare-bones campaign, riding around the early states in the Straight Talk Express bus, and he got his campaign back on track. But the one person that's shown he can run a good campaign and that he's disciplined and competent, at least as far as campaigning goes, is Barack Obama. So I don't listen to the rhetoric from the right wing that says, oh, he's so untested, he's dangerous. They forget that George W. Bush was the guy they handed to us. And I'll take my chances with Obama any day over what the last 8 years of Bush-Cheney have given us. We're going to take a break, and the Andy Finn Show will be back on WEBR Radio right after this.